and welcome to another episode of Unearthing Paranormalcy, the podcast that digs into the paranormal and tries to find normalcy in the topic. I'm Amy.
I'm Dave.
I'm Chad.
And I'm Elijah.
This week we have a topic that you can really sink your teeth into.
Oh, that sucks.
Yes, they do. Ha ha, your blood.
That was scary. Very scary.
Two puns.
Well, quit leaving us in suspense. What's the topic?
No, every time you do a pun, you have to count it. So we're at two now. All right. We are talking about the vampire. The vampire.
The or the?
The vampire.
Okay. Close enough. Close enough. Yes.
Vampires and vampire.
Did you just go in reverse? That was great.
I didn't know you could talk and rewind.
She's backmasking us.
Is that pig line?
Vampires and vampire lore can be found in almost every culture on Earth. And today's modern vampires claim to be the very creature that people have been scared of for centuries. But throughout time, the vampire has evolved and changed just as society changes. From the dark Nosferatu to the vampires of Anne Rice, battling to retain what smidge of humanity they have left, to Twilight and the teenage vampire dramas that we see today.
Sparkles!
Let's dig in and explore where the vampires came from and how they've evolved over the centuries. We will also dig into those who claim to be real vampires and the whole subculture of the vampire, along with the way vampires fit into our pop culture of today. Chad, why don't you start us off with the origin of the vampire?
The Oxford English Dictionary dates the first appearance of the English word vampire as vampire in English from 1734 in a travelogue titled The Travels of Three English Gentlemen, published in the Harleian Miscellany in 1745. Vampires had already been discussed in French and German literature. After Austria gained control of northern Serbia and Altenia, officials noted the local practice of exhuming bodies and, in quotes, killing vampires. These reports, prepared between 1725 and 1732, received widespread publicity. The notion of vampirism has existed for millennia. Cultures such as Mesopotamians, Hebrews, ancient Greeks, Manipuri, and Romans had tales of demons and spirits, which are considered precursors to modern vampires. Despite the occurrence of vampiric creatures in these ancient civilizations, the folklore for the entity known today as a vampire originates almost exclusively from the early 18th century southeastern Europe, when verbal traditions of many ethnic groups of the region were recorded and published. In most cases, vampires are revenants of evil beings, suicide victims, or witches. But they can also be created by a malevolent spirit possessing a corpse or being bitten by a vampire. Vampaper.
Do you have love for paper as well?
No, the vampaper is for my cut my fingers and drink my blood.
Okay. The vampire doesn't have fangs. He just walks up with a paper cut. That sounds more painful.
Or being bitten by a vampire, not a vampaper. Belief in such legends became so pervasive that in some areas it caused mass hysteria and even public executions of people believed to be vampires. Now here are some descriptions and common attributes of the vampire. It is difficult to make a single definitive description of the folkloric vampire, though there were several elements in common to many European legends. Vampires were usually reported as bloated in appearance, ruddy, purplish, or dark in color. These characteristics were often attributed to the recent drinking of blood. Blood was often seen seeping from the mouth and nose when one was seen in its shroud or coffin. Its left eye was often open.
So what you're saying is I can never be a vampire?
Yeah, because your left eye can never open. It'd be really fucking creepy if it was.
Yes.
It would be clad in the linen shroud it was buried in, and its teeth, hair, and nails may have grown somewhat. though in general, fangs were not a feature. Although vampires were generally described as undead, some folktales spoke of them as living beings. Now, a lot of these, like, I know in, I think it was the Mesopotamian area, like, their vampires were just like the like a bloated corpse that would drink blood. And a lot of folklore has them as just like a zombie-like creature. It really wasn't until Nosferatu that the look of the vampire changed, really, into what we know today.
And now today, they're Edward Cullen.
Sparkles! You won't like me when I sparkle! Now, to identify vampires, many rituals were used to identify a vampire. One method of finding a vampire's grave involved leading a virgin boy through the graveyard or church grounds on a virgin stallion. The horse would supposedly balk at the grave in question. What a way to find a vampire. Come here, little boy. Get on this nice stallion. We're going to go hunt some vampires.
Okay, mister.
Whatever you
that
say.
That sounds keen.
Can I be home before 10?
Have you ever touched vagina? No? Okay, whoa. You're in.
You won't touch vagina, but you'll touch something else.
Ah, ah, ah.
One, ah, ah, ah. Generally, a black horse was required, though in Albanian, it should be white. Holes appearing in the earth over the grave were taken as signs of vampirism.
Here, little virgin boy, see this hole in the ground? Give it the fuck. Oh, it's a vampire!
Corpses thought to be vampires were generally described as having healthier appearances than expected, plump and showing little to no signs of decomposition. In some cases, when suspected graves were open, villagers even described the corpse as having fresh blood from a victim all over its face.
That was just because they buried him and they weren't dead and they freaked out. And
sitting their head on the top of the coffin trying to get out. Evidence that a vampire was active in a given area included death of cattle, sheep, relatives, or neighbors. Might as well just name something died. Folkloric vampires could also make their presence felt by engaging in a minor poltergeist-styled activity, such as hurling stones on roofs or moving household objects and pressing people in their sleep. Now, one of the first people in history who really was thought to be a vampire was Vlad the Impaler. It's thought that Bram Stoker's named Count Dracula after Vlad Dracula, also known as Vlad the Impaler. Vlad Dracula was born in Transylvania, Romania. He ruled Wallachia, Romania, off and on from 1456 to 1462. Some historians described him as just yet brutally cruel ruler who valiantly fought the Ottoman Empire. He earned his nickname because his favorite way to kill the enemies was to impale them on wooden stakes.
My favorite cartoon I've ever seen, it's a guy in... It's Vlad the Impaler, and he's stabbing some marshmallows. And he's like,
these things are fucking great! According to legend, Vlad Dracula enjoyed dining amidst his dying victims and dipping his bread in their blood. Whether those gory tales are true is unknown. Many people believe these stories sparked Stoker's imagination to create Count Dracula. I almost said Chocula. He was also from Transylvania. Sucked his victim's blood, could be killed by driving a stake through his heart. But according to Dracula expert Elizabeth Miller, Stoker didn't base his Count Dracula on Vlad. Nonetheless, the similarities between the two Draculas are intriguing.
There's actually a few different origin stories of it, and it's a lot of the origin stories are based off of the book or the movie that you're watching about him. Because I know that... like in True Blood, Lilith is the original vampire.
Yeah.
And there was another one where it was
Lilith.
Cain, I think, from Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
Cain was the original vampire.
There's an actual religion based around Cain being the original vampire as a
I want to say that's even like the storyline in Vampire Diaries. Like, I know I've seen it in a movie or show or something, and I think it was Vampire Diaries. It could be wrong.
But yeah, it was supposed to be part of his punishment from God. It created him to live forever. And
One of them, the origin was Judas.
Yeah.
That sounds about to look up, yep.
Judas, yeah. No.
I can't remember which film.
Yeah, it's all dependent on which.
Dracula 2000.
Okay, yeah.
That's the one that he was like, because there's a scene where he's talking to the priest, and it's before they actually go to, like, Romania, because that's where basically the film sequence ends. But he was like, God will cast you out, and he goes, I was there when we sat at that table, and this and that and the other thing. And he never says his name is Judas, but it hints at that. And he goes, and God basically cursed me. And then the only person that technically got cursed from that table was Judas.
What a dick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I got you, meh. Murder. Judas, no.
So vampires may have no reflection, but they typically reflect the culture at the time they are presented.
Three.
In 1819, John Polidori, the physician of Lord Byron, published The Vampire, a short work of prose fiction. It was submitted to an 1816 contest, along with Mary Shelley, Lord Byron, and Percy Shelley. Mary Shelley, of course, being the author of Frankenstein. In the story The Vampire, a young Englishman, Aubrey, meets Lord Ruthven, a man of mysterious origins who has entered London society. Aubrey accompanies Ruthven to Rome, but leaves after Ruthven seduces the daughter of a mutual acquaintance. Aubrey travels to Greece, where he becomes attracted to Inthi, an innkeeper's daughter. Inthi tells Aubrey about the legends of the vampire. Ruthven arrives at the scene, and shortly thereafter, Inthi is killed by a vampire. Aubrey does not connect Ruthven with the murder, and rejoins him in his travels. The pair are attacked by bandits, and Ruthven is mortally wounded. Before he dies, Ruthven makes Aubrey swear an oath that he will not mention his death or anything else he knows about Ruthven for a year and a day. Looking back, Aubrey realizes that everyone who Ruthven met ended up suffering. Aubrey returns to London and is amazed when Ruthven appears shortly thereafter, once again alive. Ruthven reminds Aubrey of his oath to keep his death a secret. Ruthven then begins to seduce Audrey's sister, while Aubrey, helpless to protect his sister, has a nervous breakdown. Ruthven and Aubrey's sister are engaged to marry on the day the oath ends. Aubrey writes a letter to his sister, revealing Ruthven's history, and dies. The letter does not arrive in time. Ruthven marries Aubrey's sister, kills her on their wedding night, and escapes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, that story goes, you know, right through the heart. Four,
And the year and a day is a great callback to a lot of Irish folk tales. And
I was about to say, it's like, that's such a weird fucking amount of time. You cannot speak for 357 days.
In 2 hours.
Varney the Vampire was an ongoing weekly tale written by James Malcolm Rymer and Thomas Peckett Prest.
Tis V, Varney the Vampire.
On pamphlets known as penny dreadfuls from 1845 to 1847. Penny because they cost a penny, and dreadful because they were full of violence and the macabre. Mm. At a time where a book would cost as much as a car today, and even renting a book would cost as much as a mouth.
As a mouth.
Yeah, as a mouth. And oh, even renting.
How much mouth do mouths cost?
I mean, it depends how long you're wanted for. I mean, if you admit it, man, you don't need to pay much.
And even renting a book would cost as much as a month's housing rent. Penny dreadfuls were more consumed by the literate public than the novels of Charles Dickens. Penny dreadfuls features characters such as Sweeney Todd, Dick Turpin, and Varney the Vampire. Altogether, the accumulated edition of Varney the Vampire released after its run would be over 900 pages long in tiny print.
It's over 900.
Altogether, it totals nearly 667,000 words.
First time he was talking about Varney the Vampire, I thought he said Barney the Vampire, and I was like, what, is he purple?
I love you, you love me, we're all part of a blood-sucking family, with a suck-suck here and a sucky-suck there. I want to suck you clear.
Clean, clear, it's all the same.
Varney is the first example of the quote-unquote sympathetic vampire. A vampire who despises his condition, but is nonetheless a slave to it. Throughout the series, he kills himself several times. The moonlight regenerates him every time he is killed by himself or by others in very violent and horrific ways. This might be why later iterations of vampires in the 20th century are susceptible to sunlight. This was also the first story to refer to sharpened teeth on a vampire. Some people criticize the work and compare it to later vampire novels. I think this is unfair, as novels of the time were written for the wealthy and the highly educated. Penny Dreadfuls were written for those with a smaller literary vocabulary.
So I could read them.
Do they have them in pop-up books?
I guess it's kind of like dime novels,
yeah,
compared to actual novels.
See, he says it's the first time they talked about, you know, sharpened teeth. They didn't say what kind of teeth. So I could just see a vampire with, like, an underbite.
Sharp Orc face.
I will bite you.
Carmilla is an 1872 Gothic novella by Irish author Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu and one of the early works of vampire fiction. The story is narrated by a young woman preyed upon by a female vampire named Carmilla, later revealed to be Mircalla, Countess Karnstein. The character is an example of the lesbian vampire. She expresses romantic desires towards the protagonist and is depicted as a trait of antagonism in line with the decadent movement's views of homosexuality. The decadent movement was a late 19th century movement characterized by self-disgust, sickness at the world, general skepticism, delight in perversion, employment of crude humor, and a belief in the superiority of human creativity over logic and the natural world.
I'm guessing stakes didn't work on her.
I don't know.
Steak.
The Evhartek is an early Irish legend, which was first collected in Patrick Weston Joyce's The Origin and History of Irish Names and Places in 1875. The Evhartek is similar to a revenant or a vampire, as it rises from the dead to terrorize the living, and in some instances, this includes drinking its victim's blood. This early Irish legend of the Evhartek could have been an additional source of inspiration for the author Bram Stoker, a Dubliner who penned The Undead, which in early versions had Count Vampire as the antagonist. It's been speculated that during a spirit communication session, which was popular during this time period, Stoker came upon the name Dracula, based off of the House of Dracula, which translates to House of the Dragon. The Prince of Wallachia, Vlad II Dracul, father of Vlad the Impaler, took his name from the Order of the Dragon. The Order of the Dragon was fashioned after the military orders of the Crusades, requiring its initiates to defend the cross and fight enemies of Christianity, in particular, the Ottoman Empire. Another version of the origin of the name of Dracula is an etymological one. Dracula, spelled Drochfhola, translates to bad blood in Irish.
Dracula.
Wait, how do you spell it again?
It's a vampire with a lisp.
Drochfhola.
Excuse me, beef. I am Dracula.
We are few and far between.
He's got a lisp. I'm here to suck your blood.
It's pronounced the exact same as this Dracula.
Listen here, I'm...
The Irish throw a lot of extra letters in their words.
They're playing Scrabble.
What in the hell is...
Yeah, that works.
What in the hell is a pea doing in the middle of hay?
Hey, pff.
Sorry. Continue.
Bram Stoker's Dracula is a tall, thin, pale, white-haired man with a long mustache. He also has hairy palms and long shark... He also has hairy palms and long, sharp fingernails to match his pointed ears and long, sharp white teeth. He is also depicted in the novel to be the origin of werewolf legends. If he had been called Count Vampire, I think the legacy would have ended there. But it continued to go and reflect the culture at the time it's presented.
He had white hair, long mustache, and loan sharks.
The 1922 film Nosferatu, portraying Count Orlok, actually fits more of the characteristics of Bram Stoker's Dracula than later versions. This film adds the weakness of sunlight being able to kill vampires. Hamilton Dean's 1924 play of Dracula is where vampires got an air of aristocracy, because the play was adapted as a drawing room thriller. The reason Dracula is depicted in evening clothes with well-groomed hair and a cape is because the playwright believed no one in the 1920s would have invited such a menacing-looking character as Bram Stoker's Dracula into their drawing room. These characteristics stay with Dracula from then on. The film Dracula from 1931, starring Bela Lugosi, who played the vampire on stage at the Fulton Theater, draws character inspiration from Hamilton Dean's play, more than from Bram Stoker's novel. I'm just going to run through some early films that feature vampires which have a peculiar angle or that add to the characteristics of Dracula that become a common characteristic later. Whereas Carmilla was the first novel featuring a bisexual female vampire, Dracula's Daughter, starring Gloria Holden as Countess Maria Zaleska from 1938, is the first film featuring a bisexual vampire. Son of Dracula, in 1943, uses the vampire Count Alucard for the first time, which is Dracula, spelled backwards. There's a whole series of Universal monster movies that feature Dracula, Wolfman, and Frankenstein in the early 30s and 40s. In the 1948 film, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, Bela Lugosi makes his screen return as Count Dracula. This could be called the first comedy film that features Dracula. Dracula, or Horror of Dracula in the U.S., in 1958, kicked off the Hammer Film productions of Dracula movies featuring Christopher Lee as the Count. Of course, he would go on to play a Count in Star Wars, Count Dooku. During the mid-1960s, when Westerns were all the rage in the United States, John Carradine played Dracula when he starred in Billy the Kid vs. Dracula in 1966.
Well, gosh darn it here, we got a Dracula. Put him up, partner.
This film has a Rotten Tomato score of 15%.
There ain't enough room in this coffin for the two of us.
Pilgrim.
Draw.
Christopher Lee would continue to be Dracula in all the Hammer films until 1973, including Dracula, Prince of Darkness in 65, Dracula Has Risen from the Grave in 68, Taste the Blood of Dracula in 1970, The Scars of Dracula in 1970.
The last two of those just like kind of like Pornhub or...
Now, 1972 was a big year for the evolution of vampires. The film Dracula AD 1972 was the first present-day set film. Kind of. We have to also remember the original Dracula, the play, and the 1931 film were technically in present-day settings. But not a present-day setting featuring 70s rock, bell-bottoms, hot pants, leisure suits, and afros. This was also the year Blackula, starring William Marshall, was released.
Dynamite!
Also in 1972, Bert and Ernie are counting blocks with Count Von Count. Who becomes a regular character on Sesame Street, which is the first instance I could find of vampires geared towards toddlers.
I have a problem with counting. Damn OCD.
In 1973, Hammer Film Productions released The Satanic Rites of Dracula, the last performance of Christopher Lee as Dracula. He would, of course, play the role in foreign films and for other studios. In 1974, Hammer Film Productions teamed up with the Shaw Brothers Studio to bring us The Seven Brothers Meet Dracula. This is the first Kung Fu and Dracula crossover. I brought a trailer for this one.
Black belt against black magic in the greatest battle of all time. The seven brothers and their one sister meet Dracula. While vampires drink the blood of the virgins and turn them into zombies, seen Kung Fu until you've seen the seven brothers and their one sister in action against Dracula. Year-old monster disintegrate before your eyes as the seven brothers and their one sister meet Dracula.
Also found on X Video.
Yes. That whole thing sounded like hentai porn.
I don't know if you heard the cut in the middle, but I cut like 2 minutes of that battle sound out.
And it literally sounded like dildos. Ting, ting, ting.
What kind of dildos are you using?
I have listened to this thing, watched it and listened to it like 15 times.
There's seven brothers and the one sister.
Every time I would start cracking up. It's like they just throw that one on the and their one sister.
The seven brothers and their one sister.
According to D.B. Cooper's website, this film has 5.9 stars. Good luck following that act.
I don't know why the D.B. Cooper website got me. Nonchalantly, Dave just rolled in with that. For those of you who haven't listened to our missing aviation episode, we figured out where the name for the movie website IMDb comes from. Just so nonchalantly just from D.B. Cooper's website.
The website IMDb rates it a 5.9
stars.
5.9 stars. I think the trailer alone deserves 5.19 stars. 5.9 stars. The trailer's freaking hilarious. So Eli, do you have some pop culture for us?
We'd put the trailer on Facebook, but there's some nudity in it.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes. Vampire. Their seven brothers and their one sister
are ready to.
Sorry. The three brothers and their one sister do a podcast. to defeat Dracula. Destroy her!
Continue.
Die, Dracula, die!
Vampires have been a part of pop culture from the moment of its unearthing. It was more real back in the 17th and 18th century. But as for now, whether we are talking about books, movies, shows, lifestyles, you can find vampires in all of it. Just in my 30 years, I can count multiple shows that shaped my own culture. The Twilight Saga, Buffy, The Vampire Diaries, Angel, Blade movies, all of them. Can anybody actually guess? Because we have top tens here. I like doing this whenever we cover things in pop culture. But can anybody guess the first one in the top 10 movies?
Number one or number 10?
Number one.
Movies or series?
Movies. I have series as well, but movies.
Dracula.
No. Anybody else? No.
Dracula Dead and Loving It.
No.
Lost Seven Boys. Oh. You didn't let me, I guess.
Lost cool. Boys, that's a good one.
What's number
it's
two?
I guess it is a movie.
Number two?
Blade.
The Underworld.
No.
Seven Boys and Their One Sister versus Dracula.
Interview with the Vampire. Number three.
Underworld.
No.
Seven Boys, Brothers and Their One Sister versus Dracula.
Blade.
No.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Bram I'm Stoker's serious. Dracula. Number four.
Blade.
I got it!
Number five.
Underworld.
No.
Twilight.
No. Twilight's not even on the top 10.
I was like, I would probably wouldn't even make the list.
Actually, Fright Night from 1985, the original Fright Night, is number five. Number six.
Underworld.
Underworld. Oh. Number seven.
Seven brothers and their one sister.
No, you guys, none of you guys are going to guess this one. I'll give you a hint. It takes place in a strip club in Mexico.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes, it is.
I actually love that one. I didn't realize that movie like, takes like 45 minutes before you realize what the fuck it's about.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the last 10 minutes of the movie. And you're like, oh, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it's almost like he was like, yeah, fuck it. I'm just going to make it a vampire film.
he forgot to finish writing the end of it. And they're just like, how does it end? Fuck. Vampires?
He's like, I don't fucking know. Figure it out.
Oh, we have this Dracula costume back here.
Oh, the CGI is so bad in that movie, but it's fucking awesome.
Number eight. Number eight.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Where are no. movies?
No, it's I guess a movie. That
was
a movie.
It was a movie.
It was a movie first.
Yeah. With Christy Swanson?
Yep.
It was a good movie, actually.
Dracula 2000.
No.
Oh.
It's magic. Oh.
Has a number in it. 30 Days of Night.
Oh, that's a terrible movie.
And no. Number nine. You guys won't guess this either. It has a Lestat in it, though.
Queen of the Damned.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh!
That's a good one.
Number 10.
Seven brothers and their one sister versus Dracula.
Not quite.
Billy Kidd versus Dracula.
No. This one, it was actually a pretty...
Two girls, one cup.
Oh, my goodness.
They're sucking something, but it's not blood.
So that's going to go more with the crawling.
Number 10. I'll give you guys a hint, okay? It came out in the early 2000s, and it's about a vampire who wants to stop using humans to farm for blood.
It's like 17 different movies.
Yeah, it's like the Interview with Vampire. They had there.
Vampire's Assistant?
No.
Dracula 2000?
Daybreakers.
Oh. Yeah, that's actually a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
So, all these movies, I've seen almost all of these except a few. I saw the remake of Number 5, which was Fright Night. Never actually saw the first one. But a lot of people who I talked to you about, and even like just reading... reviews on the movie, they said that it correlated with the movie, the original movie, a lot. So it was actually a remake that held up. But I've always, especially whenever Halloween comes around, or even not even Halloween, just in general, I'll watch, you know, either Dracula 2000 or just stuff like that, because that's what I watched when I was a kid.
Of those, like the top 10 is good, but really, I cannot stand that 30 Days a Night movie.
Yeah.
It was a terrible movie.
I've never seen it. It's a shocker, right? I know. Amy hasn't seen a movie.
Like, the idea of it's cool, but I don't know. I did not like it.
I actually have never seen Lost Boys.
It's a good one.
It's pretty good.
Never seen Lost Boys. I didn't even know Lost Boys was a vampire movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that
it's on Netflix, I think.
And actually, I didn't even see I read Interview with a Vampire when I was in high school, but I actually never saw Interview with a Vampire until this year, or last year, I could say, because it's 2019.
I've seen them. I've got the books over there to read. I've never actually read the books, though.
I've got the whole series of Tom Cruise, so he kind of ruined the movie for me.
He played it really well.
Brad Pitt was hot in that one. That was back when Brad Pitt was sexy.
Was Lost Boys the first one where if you kill the head vampire, all his underlings die?
What's funny about, Blade, we all know the Blade movie, because we're going to talk...
I'm so excited for the new one.
Yeah, me too. I didn't even know they're actually coming out with a new one, mm-hmm. actually.
Oh, well, it's going to be a series.
It's going to be
a Netflix series, yeah.
Okay. But what kind of is interesting about these is that you see all the correlations of the myths of how to kill a vampire or even, stop the bloodline or basically eliminate them all together.
Is it sad that the worst one of the Blade movies is my favorite?
Which one is that one?
Blade 3.
Trinity? Me too.
Ryan Reynolds and Triple H. It's so bad.
But it's
one of my
favorites. Ryan Reynolds made that movie good.
He added so much comedy into that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's got a name tag. It's like, hello, my name isn't fuck you.
Yeah. And then also, I learned how to say thunder cunt in that movie. I literally watched that movie in theaters, and the next day, I got sent to the principal's office for calling my teacher a thunder cunt. Shit you not. She first asked my parents how I knew that word, and I wasn't going to ever reveal why or how I knew that word.
It's not as quick as lightning cunt.
Lightning cunt, yeah. Thunder cunt.
That'd be Thundercats. Thunder cunts.
Shut up, Becky. Jesus.
That was loud, sorry.
All right, so we're going to move on to the, like I said, with the top 10 of these movies, you kind of learn, how to kill a vampire, basically what the, and what kind of obsessed me is, like, the vampire movies that I mostly watched. Like, I did watch a lot of these, but, like, for instance, in Dracula 2000, they throw a net over his body while he's under UV lights, and one of the things is, when he escapes, he's already untied all the knots that are on him. And then they throw a can of seeds, and he counts them in midair. And it's just like one of those things that just goes along with everything else that we've talked about so far. The stipulations and basically the things that keep vampires away.
The best thing about best rumor about Dracula 2000 was that they were originally casting Keanu Reeves as Dracula.
Yeah.
And there's a skit about that. It's right after he did Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So everyone's like, would it just be funny to be like, it's me, Count Keanu. I mean, Dracula. Excellent.
He was in a Dracula movie, wasn't he? I think he was in...
He was in one of them.
He was like the boyfriend. He wasn't Dracula. Yeah. But
yeah,
he was Dracula, I think is what it was.
I don't...
Well, there's like 12,000 movies called Dracula.
True.
Yeah. We're going to move on to this top 10 shows.
Seven Brothers and Their One Sister versus Dracula.
The series.
The series.
It's seven episodes, plus one extra one.
Bonus feature. All right, number one.
True Blood.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, number two.
The Originals.
No.
Vampire close. Diaries.
Yes. Are you reading my phone? I will kill you. Number four. Sorry, number three.
Three, then four,
Number three.
The Originals.
No.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
I'm on a roll.
Number four.
Angels.
Yes. Ooh. Good fucking job. Number five, you guys will not get this one.
Hang on.
It's an anime.
Oh, fuck, I'm out.
oh, what's that? There's like quite a few with vampires, but there's ones vampires.
This one
Night
I actually had to watch the first three episodes to even understand what the fuck it was about.
I guarantee you tell me what it is. I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen it. Go ahead.
Helsing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So seriously,
sorry, I like anime.
I watched.
It's weird.
I did the free 30-day deal for Crunchyroll just so I could look this particular anime up. And oh my god. I mean, just the first three episodes, you see how it kind of unfolds and the madness of like how they portray certain factors of like how Helsing became Helsing, and just
why wasn't it on the top 10? Because I think it beats
Van Helsing.
Yeah, no. It beats a lot of those.
It wasn't even in the top 20.
Wow.
I guess because it's not mainly about. I mean, I guess it is mainly about Dracula,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Number six.
The originals.
No, oh. Not even on the list.
Yeah, this is too new.
hint.
Knight is spelled with a K. That's the best I can do for you. Number six is Forever Knight. Basically, it's about a knight. It's about a knight that is transformed into a vampire, and he still keeps the creed of...
Vaguely remember that movie.
Yeah.
Or that show.
Yeah. It's literally about a it's about a knight from like the 16th century that is turned into a vampire, and he basically protects the knight. It also includes him feeding on livestock and animals over humans. Kind of feeds into the whole Twilight type situation where, you know, Edward's family were animal feeders and not human feeders. Really interesting. Number seven.
Seven brothers and their one sister.
Shit. Number seven is Being Human.
Okay. I tried watching that.
Watched like one or two episodes.
Fan of that show. For me to get into a show, especially about like, I wouldn't say paranormal, but just cryptids and stuff like that, or even horror, it has to like come out with like, not really explosions, but theoretically, it has to come out with like explosions.
Something big to catch it.
Huge. I mean, watching, when I first watched the first episode of True Blood, dude was about to get a blowgy, you know? And I was like, okay.
So he needs the explosion. Is what he
exactly.
That's what he
was about to get a blow jizzle. And then all of a sudden they say, selling True Blood or whatever. And he's like, oh, God, turn around. And then the vampire was behind the counter the whole time. No, he wasn't. He was not. He was behind them.
Yeah, he was the redneck.
Yep, the redneck. Number eight.
Eight sisters and their one younger brother.
It rhymes.
Helter Skelter.
Eight. Eight is The Gate.
Never heard of it.
This one, you guys will hear have heard of. And it repeats, so I'm not going to give you two tries in this one. Number nine and number ten are the same one, but in different years. Basically, it was remade twice, and then remade a third time, and then remade a fourth time. Dark.
Never heard of it.
Dark Shadows.
Never heard of it.
You've never heard of Dark Shadows?
Nope.
No.
Really?
Me either.
For when it's on the list twice. We're like,
So, Dark Shadows...
Everywhere.
Dark Shadows on number nine. Dark Shadows was from 1966 to 1971. And the basic storyline is... if you guys have ever seen Dark Shadows, the movie, which was released in 2015 or 2014, it was a remake of an actual movie. But the storyline remains the same. He dies trying to save his bewitched girlfriend, and he ends up getting cursed. But it's not being changed into a vampire. Well, he's cursed by being changed into a vampire by the witch that basically hexed his girlfriend jumping off a cliff, and then he's forever to live alone type deal. Even though he bangs her like three or four times.
Never heard of it.
And then Dark Shadows, made in 1991, was a remake of that show. So.
See, I can think of so many other movies and shows and stuff that are really good that I could have made that list too.
Yeah,
Beautiful Creatures.
Beautiful Creatures.
That's
is
a good one.
What about if
my babysitter's a vampire?
Yeah,
we watched that one constantly.
Once Bitten with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Freaking A. What's Dracula Dead and Loving It. I love that movie.
I do too.
What was the one that had
Scooby Doo and Dracula? Like,
it's good to be dead.
Vampire Dog. If you have a kid, you've probably seen Vampire Dog. Seen
one. Number one book, though. I didn't get all of them, but the number one book you guys will not get, and I don't agree with it.
Bram Stoker.
Bunnicula.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I just read that book.
I just read that one actually, just not too long ago, because our daughter wanted to read it, so I was reading it myself first, and then we were going to read it together. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read that in elementary school so many times.
Hank the Cow Dog had a encounter with Bunnicula as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't agree with it because I feel like there's so many other novels and books that had some sort of vampire or, you know.
Well, True Blood, the books and the show totally should be on tops of the list. Those are really good. And I really like the lore behind them and all of that. Buffy the Vampire, I think the nostalgia that I have for Buffy, because the movie especially, I didn't watch the show so much. The show came out a little bit later and I was a little bit older and wasn't really into that stuff anymore. But when the movie came out, it was great. Yeah, words probably spelled wrong. But Vampire Diaries is good. I have not seen Origins or Legend or Legacies.
Legacies is my favorite of the original series.
There's another one. I know maybe I'm thinking of Vampire Diaries. But then there's a lot of book series that are really good. There's The Academy, which is really good. It's more like Twilight, more of a young adult fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Twilight is a good book series. I like the movie series. I mean, you can't think of it as Dracula. You've got to think of it as new invention of a vampire.
Well, I mean, it's a teen book, like, so love and romance. But the part that got me, the part that makes me hate that, whose bright idea was it? What happens when they see the sunlight hits them? They turn into a disco ball. part just ruined Twilight.
So Twilight in general, like I said, a lot of those, like that became huge whenever I was in high school, because that's when the movies were started to be released. And people who didn't read books, I mean, movies came out, they're like, oh, let's go here, let's go there. I was dating a chick, and I ended up going to the first one with her and was like, holy shit, this is good. She's like, you could read all the novels. I have them already. So I like read all of them and then was like, okay, this is actually a pretty good storyline. But yeah, again, my middle name being Edward and me shining in the light doesn't really work.
Well, I also have to say that if you've only seen the movies, that's definitely a series that the movies don't do the books justice.
Exactly.
Now, True Blood... The books are really freaking good. The TV show is really freaking good. And they don't work together. I mean, there's characters are the same, but the storyline changes in between the two. So they're really good on their own and separate.
Yeah.
I haven't read Interview with a Vampire. Like I said, I have the books to read them. I really like the movie. I like Queen of the Damned.
That's a situation where the book is as good as the movie is. Okay.
I'm trying to think of other ones that I've read. I've started reading Bram Stoker's Dracula. I couldn't get into it when I was reading it.
It's an older literature.
Yeah, I have a hard time reading some of the older literature. My brain doesn't function well.
I can't do it either because the way they word things is just too much.
There's so much verbose.
Yeah. There's also... So I'm going to make a couple suggestions for our listeners. There's a show called Hemlock Grove. That's still on Netflix. Series is still going. And they actually pronounce, it's not really a pronunciation issue, but they call them umpires or umpires.
Umpires.
Umpires instead of vampires. And it takes a lot to basically awaken the factor of if you're born a vampire, because in this storyline, you can be born as a vampire and there's only a certain amount of these. But good storyline, has werewolves in it, fucking awesome.
What about born again vampires?
You've been blessed by holy and you're on fire. The second one is, this is actually really interesting because when we brought up doing vampires for this podcast, about 4 days prior to this, a show released on Netflix called Dracula.
Because that's how it works. Because we
well,
from
no,
the-
this is the first time it's worked where it came out before we did the episode. Normally, like, we would have done recording this and go home, like, oh, look, brand new today at midnight, Dracula. But you son of a bitch.
So the thing is, like, I've been watching this show. I haven't finished it yet, but they're literally, every episode is an hour and a half. So it's literally like you're watching a movie. The first episode is basically the opening scene, not the opening scene, but the second scene in Bram Stoker. Like, that's exactly what it is, you know? And the storyline basically reaches out the same way as well. And like I said, you can find the history and or the pop culture anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I was telling you guys earlier, vampires is definitely one that has a huge histology.
Histology. Yeah.
I mean,
that's a word that I'm going to throw in my dictionary.
It's
Amy's dictionary.
It's my dictionary.
Sorry. Can't steal it.
Damn.
Trademark.
We'll just have the UMP dictionary, and then we'll just put all of our stuff in there.
Plane station.
Now,
that needs to be a shirt idea. And just says UMP dictionary, and it's just got like a list of words that
we've
made up.
Now, another place that had a lot of really good vampire documentaries is Amazon Prime. You have to type in vampire documentaries, because if you just type in vampire...
Yeah, I couldn't find any because I just typed in vampire movies, and it's just nothing but vampire movies, like
Z-rated Hollywood, vampire movies. Yeah.
Sorry, V-rated vampire movies. I lost count.
You're at five.
Five.
Don't edit any of that out.
Now, Dave and I watched one that was about the evolution of vampires and Dracula and all that, but it was in German, but it was really, really, really good. But you had to read the subtitles. I think it was Vampires Fact and Fiction or something like that. Something like that is what it was called. It was really good. I watched some, because I'm about to cover some real life vampires, and I watched a whole series that was about real life vampires. And I think there's like 13 episodes, but they're like 15-20 minute long episodes. Really good. I mean, there were a bunch of really good documentaries on there.
There's actually, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure at one point in my life I saw it, but I think there's a real sex episode about vampires.
Probably.
It was weird.
That actually is 100% true. And they actually talked to...
I wasn't making it up.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to come off like that. But that I actually saw that episode. And it wasn't, I don't know, like half the conversations were between partners, so they're being interviewed, and half the conversations are literally like the first time that she tasted or he tasted her blood. It was like one or the other.
Yeah.
And then there was also always a promise of being turned. So it's, it's at
Turn
this point, it's...
around, bright eyes.
White teeth. Turn around, brown teeth. Stop sucking my blood. But anyways, it was really interesting. Okay. Absolutely interesting.
All right. Well, let's get it and learn a little bit about those people who claim to be vampires. The vampire lifestyle is an alternative lifestyle that is largely a subculture of the goth subculture. But not all vampires are goth.
And not all goths are vampires.
Precisely. Now, there are four different types of vampires. These people actually claim that they gain energy and nourishment from blood, or there's a couple of different types. But right, the first one is a sanguinarian. They are the blood drinkers, and they claim to get nourishment and energy from drinking human blood, animal blood, whatever type of blood they prefer. Then there's the psychic vampire. They tend to draw nourishment and energy from just the energy people put off. Then you have pranic, And those people get their energy through sex and sex acts.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
On that documentary, they were talking about they don't actually have to go through the physical act of sex, but just the arousal puts off the energy and they can get the energy from that.
So it's like sex magic.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And then you have the hybrid. And the hybrid do both psychic energy and drinking blood. Now, the ideology behind the vampire belief system is the basic belief of vampirism is that the value of the individual is superior to that of the group, tribe, or nation. And everything vampires do, they believe in challenging anything opposing individual freedom. Now, on that documentary as well, that one thing I noticed about that that was different than what I had found there was the NOVA, the NOVA, which is the New Orleans Vampire Association, which is what the documentary is all about. They actually get together and they put together Thanksgiving feasts, Christmas feasts, and Easter feasts for the people of New Orleans. And they set up on the street and they feed the people in New Orleans. And they do a lot. They're building a homeless shelter. I mean, they're doing a lot for the New Orleans community.
You mean they're making a food bank?
Would you like to try some blood pudding?
Now, the consumption of blood, they claim that the consumption of blood provides them with energy and strength. Now, if they're doing blood, they have donors. If they're blood drinkers, they have what are considered blood donors. Although they're not vampires themselves, blood donors are people willing to allow a vamp to drink their blood. Vampires and donors are considered equal, although the donor is expected to have some subservience to the vampire. And most of the time, the donor is usually a sex partner. But some vampires have more than one donor. They'll have a few different donors, so they don't drain them. We actually watched one of them feed on the documentary, and he sterilizes his mouth, and then he cleans the area where he's going to make the wound, and then he will make the wound, then he cleans the wound, and then he checks it every couple of hours. And he has the donor bill of rights that the NOVA wrote, where basically the donor has rights, and so it's fair to everybody involved. Because the vampire subculture was tied heavily with the BDSM subculture for a long time until a lot more of the vampires created their own little group.
So yeah. It's all very consensual.
Yes. Now, some vampires belong to groups called covens, houses, and clans, while others do choose to live a solitary lifestyle. Now, there are other members of the vampire community, and these people are called lifestyle vampires. And they dress in the goth garb. They hang out with the vampires, but they themselves are not vampires. Some of these people are fangsmiths. They actually will make fangs for the vampires to wear because a lot of the vampires like to wear prosthetic fangs. They hang out with the vampire crowd. Those people are also known as vampires or lifestylers. These people are voluntary participants in the vampire lifestyle by dressing in gothic fashion, but do not require feeding to maintain their health. Real vampires do not like to be associated with lifestylers. However, they do not reject them entirely. Many who are real vampires do dress in gothic clothing. Some of them sleep in coffins, things like that. And a lot of lifestylers do the same. But since real vampires do not believe that it's their place to tell someone whether they are indeed a real vampire or not, there is often a great deal of just intermingling between them. Now, that's one thing that I learned while watching that documentary is they're very much like I am. Like, believe in whatever in the hell you want to believe. And vampirism is not a religion. It's a lifestyle choice. It's a path. But it's not really a religion. A lot of them are Catholic, voodoo. They practice voodoo as well. I mean, some of them are very religious. They're just vampires. Now, there's also a member of the vampire community known as the role players. Role players are players of a live-action role-playing game, Vampire the Masquerade. Vampire the Masquerade started as a tabletop storytelling game, but has since expanded to include video games, books, soundtracks, card games, and etc.
Now, when I was in high school, I played the tabletop game.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
Now, these people are often not accepted by real vampires. The real vampires try to distance themselves from them. They are not accepted because of their negative attention that they bring to the vampire community. There have been some extreme cases that the lines between reality and fiction have been blurred. I know there was a kid who killed his girlfriend's family. He got too into the game, and he killed them and kidnapped her. And I mean, there's some true crime behind real vampires, or not real vampires, true crime behind role players. Also, the real vampires don't like to be viewed as simply playing a game. Now, real vampires are all over the world, but they have largest populations in Manhattan, New Orleans, and London. These cities also host vampire gatherings, such as Father Sebastian's Endless Night Vampire Ball. Then there's vampire festivals or noir havens, which are events where vampires from all over the world come together and dress in costume, and they get to know one another. So, I mean, there is a whole subculture of vampires. And like I said, that documentary is really, really informative. Some of them, yes, were very goth. Some of them, like there was one guy, he was just wearing a t-shirt and jeans, and he didn't look goth at all. A lot of them have psychic abilities. Like there was one woman who did a lot of tarot readings and things like that. Really, I remember watching another documentary a few years back where they actually tested the blood of the vampires to see if drinking blood was actually doing anything for them. And all of them had the same deficiency. I cannot remember for the life of me what it was. But they said that there could be a correlation between drinking blood and it. It's kind of like an iron deficiency or something like that, to where actually drinking blood does help them, does give them energy, does make them feel better. But there are other ways to get that besides just drinking blood. But I'm not going to kink shame. I'm not going to. Oh, yeah. I mean, if this is the lifestyle you choose, more power to you, because these people seem like a lot of fun. I was sitting there watching the documentary going, I want to hang out with these people. In fact, one of the guys looked just like a guy that I used to date. And I was sitting there thinking, he could have been a freaking vampire.
I think it's really cool that they're able to just live how they want to live it.
Yeah.
And that they found a way to do it and a place to do it and a community to do it with.
Yeah.
So while you're talking, I made a really stupid pun in my head. Joke, I guess, in my head. What do vampires call their Uber rides? Food drives.
Ha, ha, ha.
Six. Sorry, you heard it. For some reason, like I was like, what's a stupid punny joke? And all of a sudden that jumped in my head. I was like, not too shabby for coming up on the spot.
One of the funniest things, well, not funny things, but one of the things that after Katrina happened, the Nova Association of Vampires, they actually put together food drives for the people who were still there because many of them couldn't leave.
Yeah.
And they were the only food distribution and food drive place that didn't get robbed. And the guy said, I don't know. Maybe it was because there's a bunch of big vampires walking around with swords.
I would think a blood drive would be more up their alley.
They did. They do blood drives. They actually literally do blood drives for the community, not for consumption, but for the community.
No,
yeah.
That's not what I meant. This
particular clan of vampires really seems to be community oriented,
yeah.
And they really seem like really down to earth.
So that
people.
Seems really that's really cool.
Really, I'm telling you, watching the documentary made me kind of like the whole culture.
I love looking into subcultures and countercultures like this.
Yeah, I mean, there was a show on. I think I've talked about it before, but there was a show on Sci-Fi back. How long have you been out of the Army?
15 years.
So it was at least 15 years ago that they put a bunch of religious people into a house. Mm-hmm. So they had there was a Christian, there was a Wiccan, there was
a vampire,
and there was a Jewish person, and then there was a They're just a bunch of different religions that were living in a house, and it was kind of like Big Brother. And that was actually the first time I was actually ever introduced to there being a whole vampire subculture.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty fascinating then. I mean, I was always attracted to like the goth culture back in school.
Oh, you were a goth.
I wasn't allowed to. Mom would not let me dress goth. I would like on the weekends, but like.
Now, on this show, did they incorporate a Muslim into it?
I think there was.
Yeah. Was there?
We've talked about the show on a couple of their earlier episodes, but I remember you and Melissa. I think it's Melissa. Catherine.
It was Marie.
Marie? Okay, that's who it was. One of them. Going as goths to go rent a movie from
Stop and Go Video. Yeah, back in the day when we would rent, I guess it was DVD. No, it was VHSs. We'd rent the VHSs, and yeah, we dressed goth, and we ran into our teacher, and she took their picture to put in the yearbook. It's not in there. I looked.
Well, I'm glad they did, because at the time, the majority of the country was highly anti-Muslim.
Yeah, and then the whole premise of the show was to see who was more open-minded. And, you know, as they'd vote people off as it went. And, well, the Christian, I think, ended up winning. But if you look at the Christian from the beginning of the series, the show, to the end, they went through a process of opening their mind, because they were very closed-minded in the beginning. And then they each episode would, like, open up a little bit more. I was actually rooting for the vampire. The vampire was there towards the end. I wanted the vampire to win, but you know.
Such is life.
Yeah. It was a good show, though. And it
did it. I was just going to let you guys know, one of our listeners actually had a, and I was going to bring this up at the beginning of the episode, but or the podcast, but I completely forgot. One of our listeners actually saw some strange lights.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He actually sent me a very descriptive, description of what he saw. Can I go ahead and share that?
Go for it.
All right. Well, a buddy of ours, Chad and I, we have a buddy named Chase who has been listening to our episodes here lately. But this is what he said, and this is what he saw. He said, while listening to your episode on Strange Lights, I was jumping in my chair to share this experience from the previous week. I have lived my entire life 12 miles from the nearest town with a Walmart, so the night sky is always beautiful and shining. December 22nd, I was hunting behind my house. It was a cool evening, and the sun had been down long enough that it was pretty dark out. While hunting, I sat with a tree line behind me, so I have a view of the western sky. At one point, I leaned back and looked up at the many stars over my head when I saw a satellite appear in the center of the sky heading east. Right as it was about to disappear from view due to the tree line behind me, I see another one pop up. I thought, wow, that's cool. Then another one came, and another one. They were equally spaced apart, flying for about 4 to 6 seconds in my view when the next one would appear. I messaged my brother, if you're outside, this is his quote, if you're outside, look up at these satellites. I've counted 20. He replied, what the fuck is that? He had a better view, and the chain was viewable as far as he could see. We estimated somewhere around 40 to 45 went across from the time I saw the first till the last. It lasted what seemed to be 5 minutes or more. Notably, the last was doubled, the distance from its predecessor, as if one in the chain was lost. Who knows how many there actually were? I immediately noticed when I looked up. Many asked me if it was SpaceX's Starlight satellites, but those were supposed to be over Africa at the time, and the photos looked nothing like what I saw. Much more concentrated lights. I have a cousin who said he has a Facebook friend in Pawhuska that posted on her Facebook about the same lights. I have seen nothing else on it. So between him and his cousin, and then his cousin had a friend who posted the same situation that she saw. So
interesting.
Wow, that's remarkable.
And that's around the time you saw your light taking Eli home.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, very cool. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah,
if you
Chase,
see any more,
you.
Let us know.
What it really was just ducks with running lights.
Oh my goodness. It was Rudolph and the reindeer testing flights.
Yeah. Thank you for not shooting those down, Chase.
Damn it, Chase. Why didn't you try to shoot it down?
Then our reindeer episode would have been our Christmas. Or
Rudolph?
Our Rudolph episode would have been so much better. We would have had.
We would have had pictures and everything.
Yeah. But thanks, man. We appreciate that.
Yes. Anybody else has stories like that? It doesn't have to be about a recent episode. If you've got a story about a medium back from our first two episodes, second and third episodes, send us your stories. We love them. But yeah, I think that'll do it for our vampire episode. I think we hope we covered it well.
Shine a light on.
Shine a hot.
Seven.
The vampire culture is very cool. I grew up with a lot of vampire movies and TV shows. I think all of us have. I've never found vampires super scary. Like, I don't feel like they're one of the scarier of the monsters in the TV shows and stuff. But, you know.
It's been really fun kind of researching it and really learning about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I said, I want to go hang out with the New Orleans vampires.
I'm surprised it took us this long to do a vampire episode.
I am too. We talked about them a bunch, but we've never actually covered them. So I hope we covered it well. If you are a vampire and you've got some awesome stories to tell us, or if we made an error in our research, or if I made an error in my research on the real vampires, let me know, because you're in a really freaking cool subculture. And I very much like it. Go to our Facebook at UMP Normalcy. Our Instagram is UMP Normalcy. Our Twitter is UMP Normalcy. On Facebook, join our group. You can like our page and then go join our group, which is pinned on our page, so you can find it. We share a lot of memes, stories. We ask questions. We have a winner of our sticker. We'll be mailing our sticker to Australia. We've got our website, umpnormalcy.com, where you can buy merchandise. You can listen to our episodes. If we talk about a book, you can go and purchase the book or read excerpts of the book. We've got our Patreon. Chad and I will start recording our true crime podcast.
Well, not just the two of us. Well, yeah. All of us.
We will all be recording our true crime podcast next week. So it should be on in like a week or two.
It should be towards the end of the month. I think we're going to try to shoot for one episode per month towards the end of the month. If we get far enough ahead, we might put a couple extra out there, but check it out.
And that's patreon.com/umpnormalcy. And so until next time,
keep digging.